طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, what is your reason not to? It is Sunday, March 22, 2009. We have many event announcements today, so you may want to take notes. Next week marks the beginning of Israel Apartheid Awareness Week at Boston College. On Tuesday, March 24, Harvard Law Professor Duncan Kennedy will speak at 7 p.m. in Higgins 310. On Wednesday, March 25, there will be a class report back on Israel-Palestine at 7:30 p.m. in Higgins 310. On Friday, March 27th, there will be an Apartheid Day at the Dust Bowl, figuring exhibits, photos, and other materials. On Wednesday, March 30th, Professor Ilan Pape and Professor Ghada Karmi will speak on Israel-Palestine, What Future for Peace Now, at 7:30 p.m. in Devlin, 008. And on Tuesday, March 31st, Professor Lila Farsakh will speak on Israel Apartheid, A Futile or Necessary Analogy, at 7 p.m. in McGinn, 121. Other events on Israel-Palestine. On Wednesday, March 25th, 2009, a talk on Understanding Palestine and Israel, Why History Matters, will be given by Dr. Elaine Hagopian, Professor Emerita of Sociology at Simmons College in Boston. Professor Hagopian was visiting professor and distinguished lecturer at the American University of Beirut and the American University in Cairo, respectively. She served with UNESCO and UNICEF in the Middle East and was awarded two Fulbright Hayes Faculty Research Grants for research on the Middle East. Professor Hagopian will give a talk from 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Community Change Library on Racism, located at 14 Beacon Street, room 605 in Boston. Seating is limited, so please RSVP by calling 617-523-0555 or by writing to Janet at communitychangeinc.org. The Trans-Arab Research Institute, an independent American think tank registered in the state of Massachusetts, and the William Joyner Center for the Study of War and its Social Consequences of the University of Massachusetts are convening an international conference to undertake a critical assessment of the current status of the two-state solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and to explore the logic and feasibility of a one-state solution based on equal citizenship for Palestinians and Israelis. The conference will be held at the Lipke Auditorium on the second floor of the Science Center on March 28th and 29th, 2009, on the campus of the University of Massachusetts in Boston, 100 Morrissey Boulevard in Boston. To register or for more information, please visit the website onestateforpalestineisrael.com. Following this conference, a joint MIT-Harvard symposium will be held on March 30th and 31st. A series of panels will discuss the role of United States and international actors, as well as human rights and international humanitarian law in the wake of recent events in Gaza, bringing together experts in the fields of human rights, history, political science, U.S. foreign policy and law. The two-day symposium will include a range of views from the United States, Israel, Palestine, and UN NGO perspectives. Speakers will include such luminaries as Richard Falk, John McGinn, Meron Benvenisti, Henry Sigmund, Congressman Brian Baird, Mustafa Barghouti, Rami Khoury, William Corcoran, Carmen Abulsi, Gabriel Pitterberg, Irene Gensier, George Bisharat, Barry Posen, Sarah Roy, Hossam Zomlot, Anat Biletsky, Sami Abdel Shafi, and Andrew Whitley, Director of the Representative Office of UNRWA. The symposium will be held on Monday, March 30th from 1:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Wong Auditorium at MIT Building E51, that's MIT Building E51, located at 70 Memorial Drive in Cambridge, and on Tuesday, March 31st from 1:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Austin Hall at the Harvard Law School, located at 1515 Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge. March 30th is the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinians in memory of Land Day. On February 29, 1976, the Israeli government announced that it planned to confiscate 21,000 dunams, which is 5,500 acres, of Arab-owned land in order to create 8 Jewish industrial centers. Israel's Ministry of Agriculture declared the plan's primary purpose was the creation of a Jewish majority in the Arab Galilee. Palestinian community organizers decided to organize a general strike. In response, Israeli authorities announced a curfew on the evening of March 29, 1976. The following morning, Israeli police and military forces entered the striking villages, provoking Palestinian youth into a stone-throwing demonstration, and then Israeli forces responded with live ammunition, indiscriminately opening fire upon the unarmed protesters. By the end of that day, the Israeli soldiers had killed 6 residents of Sakhnin, Arabi, Kufr Khana, and Taibe, injured 96 others, and arrested 300 villagers. The Palestine House of New England will be commemorating Land Day on Saturday, April 4th, with a talk at 6:30 p.m. on the Israeli and Palestinian perception of land by guest speaker Dr. Ghera Talhami, D.K. Pearson, Professor of Politics Emerita at Lake Forest College. The talk will be followed by a Palestinian homemade dinner at 7:10 p.m. and music at 8:10 p.m. The event will take place at the Palestine Cultural Center for Peace, located at 41 Quint Avenue in Olson. And on Tuesday, April 14th, the Evelyn Abdallah Menkoni Memorial Series will present a talk by award-winning Washington Post journalist Anthony Shadid on A Lost Levant, a reporter's reflections on Lebanon, Palestine, and Iraq. The event, which is sponsored by the William G. Abdallah Library and the Middle East Law Students Association at the Harvard Law School, will take place from 7:15 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Harvard Law School's Austin Hall. Refreshments will be served at 6:45 p.m. Now for a summary of news highlights. Yesterday, the Israeli police, under orders of Minister Avi Dichter, moved massively to prevent any Palestinian celebration organized by the Palestinian Authority, marking Jerusalem as the cultural capital of Arab culture for the year 2009. Police prevented Palestinians from congregating in public areas, while Palestinian students were prevented from entering the Old City and visiting the Al-Aqsa Mosque to commemorate their heritage. Any signs of celebrating, like flying Palestinian flags or balloons, were also banned. Jerusalem, Al-Quds, was designated the 2009 Capital of Arab Culture in 2006 by Arab Ministers of Culture and the Arab League. Simultaneous ceremonies sponsored by the PA officially kicked off yesterday in Bethlehem, Gaza, and Mar Elias refugee camp in Lebanon, in an effort to maintain cultural ties between Palestinian communities in Palestine and in the diaspora. The talks in Cairo, aimed at reconciling mainly the Fatah and Hamas parties, were adjourned. The optimistic speculation that a unity transitional government will be announced by the end of March is becoming more unlikely by the day. What was agreed in Cairo is that the new government will be called a coalition government and that it will be constituted according to Palestinian Basic Law, which gives an advantage to the party that holds a majority in the Palestinian Legislative Council, and that party is Hamas. At issue is whether the coalition government will be recognized by foreign governments. The fly in the ointment there is once again the impossibly one-sided demands of the United States and the European Union that Hamas commit to all previous agreements between Israel and the PA with no reciprocal demand of Israel, and the demand that Hamas recognize Israel's so-called right to exist, while Israel refuses to acknowledge Palestine's right to exist. Indeed, the historical record shows that Israel has not lived up to its end of any of the bargains it struck with the PA at Oslo or committed to at Annapolis. Last Saturday, March 14th, during an interview at Israel's Channel 2, Knesset member Avigdor Lieberman engaged in fear-mongering by raising the hallucinatory specter of a possible Egyptian attack against Israel. 3 days earlier, he had repeated the personal attack he made during his campaign against Egyptian President Mubarak by saying that Mubarak can go to hell. We also recall that Mr. Lieberman once offered to provide buses to take Palestinian citizens of Israel to the Dead Sea and drown them. And last October, Mr. Lieberman called for the execution of Arab members of the Knesset on the grounds of collusion with Hamas. Mr. Lieberman is expected to assume the posts of Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister in an extreme-right Netanyahu government. But Mr. Netanyahu has reached an impasse in his dealings with the Labour and Kadima parties and was granted an additional 2 weeks up to April 3rd to form a government. The situation in Gaza remains extremely bleak. The caretaker Olmert government continues to insist that the lifting of the siege of Gaza be preconditioned upon the release of captured Corporal Gilad Shalit, while Hamas and Egypt maintain that the siege and the prisoner release are two different matters. The siege must be lifted unconditionally, and the release of prisoner Shalit must be in parallel with the release of Palestinian prisoners administratively held without charge in Israeli jails. On Wednesday, the Israeli cabinet voted to reject Hamas's list of prisoners to be released in return for Shalit, and Hamas consequently suspended the prisoner swap. The following day, on Thursday, March 19th, Israel abducted at least 10 senior Hamas members in the West Bank to pressure Hamas into accepting Israel's terms. Israel also cancelled privileges for more than 11,000 Palestinian prisoners, including family visits and food rations. At the Rafah crossing, Egypt maintains its role of surrogate jailer for Israel. It arbitrarily opens or closes the crossing at will, without prior notice to Hamas, as it agreed to do, and it will only recognize passports issued by the Fatah government in Ramallah, a further expression of its alignment with the U.S.-Israel Fatah Troika. Out of 600 patients suffering from cancer and heart disease who applied for permits to enter Egypt, Egypt issued only 250 permits, and on Thursday denied entry to 200 patients at the crossing, at which point Hamas closed the crossing in protest and called on Egypt to respect its agreement with Hamas and accept all Palestinian passports. Also at Rafah, a Hamas rally organized by the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine was held to call for a resolution of internal divisions obstructing the establishment of a coalition government. Thousands of participants in the rally urged the parties to put aside their partisan agendas for the higher good of national unity. In the West Bank, Israeli soldiers shot a recently modified version of gas canister directly at the head of 37-year-old California activist Tristan Anderson at the end of a nonviolent protest against the illegal wall in the village of Nealin a week ago Friday. As Palestinian medics wearing neon uniforms rushed to put Tristan on a stretcher, the soldiers fired tear gas and tear canisters at the medics. Then they refused to let a Palestinian ambulance transport Tristan to hospital, forcing him to wait for an Israeli ambulance. And when an Israeli ambulance finally did show up, one of the soldiers stood grinning at the door of the ambulance, refusing to let it through, until an ISM volunteer pushed the soldier aside and slammed the door shut. Tristan was operated on at the Israeli hospital. His condition, as of last Monday, was critical. The modified gas canister used by the Israeli soldiers is an extended-range, high-velocity canister that can be shot from a distance of a quarter of a mile. The gas canister does not make noise when fired or emit a smoke tail, and has a propeller to accelerate the weapon in midair. The combination of high velocity and silence makes it extremely dangerous. In Bethlehem, Fatah-affiliated Palestinian security forces assaulted Bethlehem judge Justice Fawaz Atiyah as he was heading for the court. Court guards intervened and escorted Justice Atiyah to his office. Palestine's highest court condemned the attack. So far, no explanation was given. In Ariha, known as Jericho in this country, a training center for the PA's Presidential Guard was formally inaugurated by Prime Minister Salam Fayyad and U.S. Assistant Secretary of State David Johnson. The center, built with $9.1 million of funding from the United States, has a training capacity of 700 officers and enlisted men, and includes accommodations and dining facilities, wastewater treatment, parade grounds, classrooms, and an obstacle course, more amenities than most Palestinians have seen in their lives. Our featured guest today is Palestinian independent journalist and author Mr. Khaled Amira. Mr. Amira holds a BA in journalism from the University of Oklahoma and an MA in journalism from the University of Southern Illinois. He has been a correspondent for numerous news agencies, including Middle East International, Al-Ahram Weekly, Al Jazeera English, Sharjah TV, the Iranian News Agency, and the Palestine Information Center. A prolific author of more than 330 articles, Mr. Amira was also authorized two books and is working on a third book. He joins us now by phone from Palestine. Good afternoon, Mr. Khaled Amira.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine.
Thank you.
You recently wrote an article praising the courage of British parliamentarian George Galloway, who led the British convoy bearing supplies to Gaza. Have you met Mr. Galloway?
No, unfortunately, I have not had the honor to meet him because, like most Palestinians, we are not allowed to leave the West Bank. I have not been able to leave the West Bank for the last 15 years. The Israelis, unfortunately, classify Palestinians into two categories, either terrorists who ought to be annihilated or collaborators. There is nothing in between. So they just don't like what I write, and this is why they are punishing us. They are putting us under town arrests, and this is the situation. This is the way it is here in the West Bank, fortunately.
You live in Doura, I believe, which is
in
the district of El Khalil, known here as Hebron. And you were arrested by the Israelis and by the Palestinian Authority, I believe.
Yes, that's true.
Now, as I understand it, the demonstrations that sprang in the West Bank in sympathy with the Palestinians in Gaza who suffered under that military attack. The demonstrations in the West Bank were discouraged by the Palestinian Authority. Was that because of its relationship with Israel?
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, it is very clear that the Palestinian Authority, especially its security agencies, are at Israel's beck and call. They are very much subservient to Israel, and there is a clear collusion between the two sides against not only Hamas, but free-minded Palestinians who insist on freedom and liberation from Israel. So this has been very conspicuous during the last few years, especially since the event in the Gaza Strip. So really, before that, things were much easier for Palestine. Not easier in the classical sense, but then we had one enemy, one uh, outside the Israeli occupation, but right now it is a two-layered occupation, the Israeli army and the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority security agencies are doing a very effective job serving the Israeli occupation by preventing Palestinians from carrying out demonstrations, from resisting the Israeli occupation. I'm speaking about all sorts of resistance, including passive nonviolent resistance. And the situation in general is very bleak. There is a feeling that the Palestinian Authority is acting to appease and to satisfy Israel. It is responsible to the Israelis more than it is to its own people. And this is a very serious matter, and many Palestinians are quite indignant about it.
And because you dared to reveal this to the media, you were arrested by the Palestinian security forces.
Yes, that's true. They accused me of saying things that should not be said, of besmirching the image of the PA, criticizing Palestinian officials, and endangering the Palestinian aspirations for statehood and things like that. You know, these are concocted and trivial charges, but this is the way the PA has been functioning. The PA has to constantly seek a certificate of good conduct from the Israelis, this is part of these efforts to do so.
I wonder how many people in Palestine know of this, the plot that the United States, Israel, and the PA engaged in to mount a coup against Hamas in 2006-2007. They failed, the coup failed, and Hamas got wind of it. And it is as a result of this that Hamas was able to exert control over Gaza. But it is painted as being a coup mounted by Hamas instead of the other way around.
No. This is just propaganda. Everybody knows that the United States and Israel, in cooperation, in coordination with the Palestinian Authority, wanted to, you know, decapitate Hamas in the Gaza Strip. So, as you said, you know, Hamas knew beforehand that this was going on. General Keith Dayton, who was answerable to Ilyas Abrams, I guess, and their aim was to undo the outcome of the 2006 elections. So they wanted to rape the will, the collective will of the Palestinian people by undoing the outcome of the elections and decapitating Hamas. Why did they want to do so? They wanted to actually lower the ceiling of Palestinian expectations and enable the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, namely the leadership of Mahmoud Abbas, to accept a deal with the Israelis, whereby the Israelis would impose on the Palestinians a kind of liquidation of the Palestinian cause, a deal without Jerusalem, without the refugees, with most of the settlements remaining intact in the West Bank, because they think, probably correctly, that the main obstacle to imposing a capitulation on the Palestinians is strong opposition movement known as Hamas. This is the reason why Israel and the United States wants to liquidate Hamas. The terror issue is only a distraction. It's a red herring. It is not the real thing. The real thing is to impose a capitulation on Palestinians, whereby Israel would be able to retain most of the settlements, to retain most of East Jerusalem, and to liquidate the paramount issue of the right of return for the refugees.
Yes, the only sources of resistance are nonviolent resistance to the wall in the West Bank and Hamas in Gaza. And their aim is to eliminate all forms of resistance to the military occupation. Is that correct?
This is correct. And the purpose is not to enable peace between Israel and the Palestinians, but rather to enable Israel and the United States and the pro-American regimes in the Arab world to liquidate the Palestinian cause and to establish a Palestinian entity that is very much less than a state on parts of the West Bank. So their ultimate goal is the total liquidation of the Palestinian cause by eliminating every conceivable resistance on the part of the Palestinian people.
What do you think of the talks in Cairo?
Well, everybody here in the occupied territories and also among Palestinian expatriates abroad hoped that that both sides would reach a sort of modus vivendi, rapprochement, and the talks did not really completely fail. They agreed on probably 80% of the contentious issues, and I understand that the talks will be resumed within probably 2 weeks from now. This is a very serious issue, and we all hope that Hamas and Fatah will eventually agree on something that would enable the Palestinians to restore national unity, because without national unity, Israel will continue to implant division. And this is very, very bad for the Palestinian cause.
Do you see the Palestinian Authority, the PA, as the PA, being dissolved and the PLO taking over?
I don't think so, because the continued existence of the PA, the survival, even if it is superficial survival or artificial survival of the PA, this is a paramount Israeli interest. Israel will continue to use the PA as a propaganda tactic to really distract and divert attention from the occupation. Israel is expanding Jewish colonies on the West Bank in a phenomenal manner. And the PA is either silent or doing and saying nothing about it. And this is very good for the Israelis. The Israelis can claim before the international community that the Palestinians are having a state or a state in the making or a quasi-state. And distracting attention from the real thing, the elimination of any possibility for Palestinian statehood. Most serious commentators and observers and experts now believe that the two-state solution is dead. Israel has irreversibly killed the two-state solution through the proliferation of Jewish-only settlements on the West Bank. And there is no prospective Israeli government, present or future government, that would accept the dismantling of Jewish settlements. So right now we have only two alternatives. The one-state solution, which is anathema for Zionism, or open-ended conflict. The two-state solution is dead.
Could you update us, please, on events in the West Bank and if you have any news from Gaza?
Well, in the West Bank, Israel is awaiting for the opportune time to actually decapitate an entire Palestinian neighborhood in East Jerusalem, and that is the Silwan neighborhood. Israel is trying to use subterfuge, deception, prevarication, outright lies to actually convince the American administration to allow Israel to go ahead with this ethnic cleansing campaign. It's a campaign of terror and home demolitions, and it is designed first and foremost to effect ethnic cleansing, to obliterate step by step the Arab Islamic identity of East Jerusalem. This is the real motive for this rampage of ethnic cleansing in East Jerusalem. So Israel is just trying to wait for the right moment to do it as soon as possible. Israel has been barring Palestinians from carrying out cultural festivities in East Jerusalem, and they are doing that in a very aggressive way. This probably indicates that the upcoming government, the most right-wing government in Israel's history, is going to take stringent and draconian actions against the Palestinians in the West Bank. So everybody thinks that the few coming months and weeks are going to be very bleak and very ominous. In the West Bank, Israel is already tightening the Nazi-like blockade of the Gaza Strip, and the items allowed into the Gaza Strip are getting smaller and smaller. The list is of items allowed into Gaza is getting smaller and shorter. So really, the Palestinian community, the survival of the Palestinian community, depends to a very large extent on the goodwill of the international community. We depend on the international public opinion. If the international public opinion turns a blind eye or goes into a kind of slumber, we are going to suffer in a very real manner. So that's why I salute the efforts of these solidarity movements led by people like Mr. Galloway. This is a life or death situation. I am not speaking metaphorically. Situation here transcends reality, and sometimes it defies linguistic description.
Yes, yes, you're right. It does defy any kind of linguistic description. There are no words that can appropriately describe what Palestinians are going through. Have you received any news about the condition of Tristan Anderson?
I wish this courageous, brave young man a speedy recovery. Unfortunately, he's still almost in a state of a clinical death, and some sources are speaking of encouraging signs, but we are talking about a callous Israeli army, an army whose modus operandi is murder and mendacity and lying. Today, Israeli newspapers have published testimonies by Israeli soldiers who took part in the recent genocidal onslaught against Gaza. And they admitted that they were ordered to kill innocent people. The Israeli army killed innocent people knowingly and deliberately. They were ordered to shoot at Palestinian rescuers, ambulances. They were ordered to target homes and places where civilians took refuge. You see, this is a Nazi-like army. This is a Jewish Wehrmacht, a Jewish SS, a Jewish Gestapo. We have to call the spade a spade, especially when we see it in the hands of our grave diggers. And I'm not speaking metaphorically again. So really, that was a colossal war crime, and the international community should not just let Israel escape with impunity. Because if we do, then the next crime will be much bigger. And Israel is constantly trying to desensitize the international public opinion in order to accept crimes including genocidal crimes against the Palestinians. The Israelis would think like this: if the international community allows us to kill 1,500 Palestinians and to mutilate and maim 5,000 Palestinians in 22 days, then next time they will allow us to kill 10,000 people and then 20,000 people. In short, it's a kind of slow motion genocide against our people.
Let me ask you, first, I should mention that this kind of defense, I was only doing my job. I was ordered to do this and that and the other. I was following orders. That kind of defense was rejected at Nuremberg.
Yes, indeed, you are right. But here the Israelis think that they have immunity by virtue of controlling the politics and policies of the United States. That's why they are now apprehensive about the advent of the Obama administration. That's why they are trying to outmaneuver this administration. They succeeded in the first confrontation with the Obama administration, namely the Freeman affair, in that they think that they can manipulate, they can undercut the Obama administration. So the Israelis know that they are indulging in criminal activities vis-a-vis the Palestinians. This is not something new. Israel itself has always been a crime against the humanity from day one, you know. But because of American, the special relationship between Israel and the United States, which is euphemism for Israeli Jewish control of American political life, at least at the federal level. Because of all of this, they think that they have immunity, that they can do what they want with the Palestinians. So it is quite possible that there will be a sort of bad chemistry between the Obama administration and the upcoming right-wing Israeli government.
For the benefit of our listeners, could you give us an update on events in the West Bank, actual events like, for example, Umm Omar? There were 40 people who were arrested there. What happened to them? In Bilayn, there were three who were injured. Anything happened there? What is happening in Umm Omar?
Well, by and large, the Israeli repression of Palestinians in the West Bank is getting more aggressive every day. And on any given day, the Israelis arrest between 10 and 20 Palestinians. And those people are mostly dumped in Israeli dungeons and the detention camps, including the notorious detention camp in the Negev. And they are kept there without charge or trial for, you know, many months, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So this is what is happening in the West Bank. As you mentioned, the Israeli army arrested more than 10 Palestinian lawmakers, including professors, and some of those were just released from lengthy detention period just last month, like Professor Azam Salhab from Hebron, for example. This man, he is a professor of Islamic studies at the Hebron University, remained languishing in detention camp, in one detention camp for 5 years, and he was released only last month. So they took him last week in order to use him as a bargaining chip, as a hostage, actually. I mean, Israel is like a gang, you know, because only gangs take hostages, and states, dignified states, do not take hostages, but Israel is not a dignified state. It is a state that lost all claim to respect and dignity, and this is why they are killing innocent people, and they are taking hostages, and they are behaving like gangsters and hoodlums and common criminals. And as such, they would not hesitate to not only arrest people without any justification, but kill them and shoot them. And, as you know, of course, lies go hand in hand with murder. So the Israelis are not only professional killers, they are all professional liars.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Khalid Amira. You have certainly helped us understand better what is going on and the currents that are operating in Israel and in Palestine. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you, and thanks to your listeners.
It was a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you. Allah ma'ak. And that does it for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved. Go to Palestine and see for yourselves how our hard-earned tax dollars to the tune of $15 million are being given to Israel every day to finance the killing of Palestinian civilians and the destruction of Palestinian society with aircraft and weaponry supplied by the United States, when we could use every penny right here in the United States, amongst many other things, to help Americans who have lost their jobs, provide health care for the millions of Americans who can't afford health care, and help provide education to American children, instead of giving that money to kill and destroy. Thank you.